you know, it's interesting to note, you know, just how much of kind of a hot topic, you know, response, you know, wolves are in the American West. And, you know, this wolf shows up, like, and he's somewhat aged. He's been kicked off from one of the packs, like, a little gray around the muzzle, a little crippled up, you know, maybe a little older. And, of course, Walt, you know, has a certain empathy.
That's Craig Johnson, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Craig Johnson is the New York Times best-selling author of 15 novels in the Walt Longmire mystery series. The novels were also the inspiration for the 6-season Longmire series on Netflix. He joins us to talk about his latest novel to feature the sheriff, Land of Wolves. Craig, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be here.
You know, for those who might not be familiar with your series of novels, tell us about Sheriff Walt Longmire.
Walt Longmire is the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state in America, Wyoming, where we have about, about 500,000 people. And he's, you know, not the usual protagonist that you tend to see in crime fiction. He's not the 6'2" of twisted steel and sex appeal kind of guy. He's, you know, what I tend to refer to as a little bit more on the side of over, you know, overage, overweight, overly depressed, you know, but he still gets up in the morning and tries to do the job. And so, you know, he's a little bit different than what it is that you normally see. But he does have some, like, you know, some secret weapons. He reads everything. He remembers it all. Like, he's got a pretty good sense of humor. And he's pretty tenacious. And I had him all to myself, you know, there for the first, you know, 7 or 8 years, like that. But then Warner Brothers came and knocked on the door, and suddenly there was a TV show that's on Netflix that's streaming 6 seasons. So his adventures have compounded along with that.
You know, there's that old writer's thing about, you know, write what you know. And one of the things you know is Wyoming, and you live in a very small population area yourself. So is that something you and Walt have in common?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look at that. You know, my ranch, the town that's nearest to my ranch, is a little town called Ucross, which has a population of 25. And I don't know, it's right there at the base of the Bighorn Mountains, you know, with Clear and Piney Creeks running into a confluence. And it's a beautiful spot like that, and maybe a little bit isolated, maybe a little bit quiet. But I think that that kind of focus and that kind of solitude is like one of the things that, you know, really enables me to write. I'm always amazed, you know, when people are surprised, you know, that I write a book a year, or that, you know, that there are 15 Walt Longmire novels and 2 novellas and a collection of short stories. But I don't know, if I didn't have a book to write every year, I don't know, I'd probably go nuts. Like, and so it's important to me, like, to have that focus and to have that solitude, like, to be able to, you know, write the books that I do.
Well, and at the beginning of this book, it opens up the first scene, his partner, Victoria, is complaining about they're in the middle of nowhere. And he says, yeah, I love this. Isn't it great?
Yeah, well, as a Philadelphia transplant, you know, her ideas of how wonderful it is to be in the middle of nowhere and Walt's ideas of how it is to be in the middle of nowhere, you know, 2 very different things. You know, but that's, you know, that's kind of the joy of writing these type of books. I mean, that's one of the things we were discussing before, like that whenever we, you know, got hooked up here on the line. I mean, there are limitations to technology, and in many ways, that's one of the things that I like to kind of display in the books, to show that, you know, it isn't quite as much of an answer to everything as we might, you know, seem to think that it is. You know, the technology is all fine and good, you know, but, you know, in the face of nature and in the face of the vast distances that, you know, make up the American West, especially even the contemporary American West, sometimes it falls short a little bit. And that's where Walt Longmire kind of has to take up the slack.
What do you think this character, Walt Longmire, continues to resonate with your readers?
Well, I think that one of the things that, you know, we were discussing, you know, just last night at one of the events, I had one of the producers, Greer Shepherd, you know, with me like that. And I think, you know, Walt kind of harkens back, you know, in many ways to a different type of hero like that. I mean, we've kind of had a, you know, an anti-hero kind of thing going since the 1960s. You know, that's kind of inundated, you know, pretty much, you know, books and television and movies and all of that. And, you know, her theory was is that, you know, Walt was kind of a guy that had a code, like a guy that wasn't going to do the wrong thing, a guy that cared about the people that were in his county, that tried to do the right thing. That's not always easy, and it's not always sexy, like that, but, you know, it's kind of important. And I guess the word that I use to describe Walt is decent. He's a decent human being. I mean, you remember when we were all growing up, we were always told by our parents, you know, to be decent. And And that's kind of important, I think. You know, and I think Walt kind of embodies a certain amount of that. He's also got a pretty good sense of humor, like that. He's got a pretty good sense of humor. He's, you know, pretty smart, pretty well read. So he's just good company in many ways.
Yeah, we mentioned the character Vic Moretti. I mean, because she goes by Vic. Tell us a bit more about her. Obviously, she comes from a big city and lives by a somewhat different code.
Oh, well, I mean, I think, you know, it's always nice to have a different perspective, you know, on the world of the book that you happen to be writing. Like that. And Vic was, you know, a good counterpoint, I think, in many ways, you know, to who Walt was. When I was, you know, first starting to put the components, you know, the books together 15 years ago, like that, I thought, okay, well, this undersheriff, she should probably be the opposite, you know, of who Walt is. Like that. So if the sheriff is male, the undersheriff should be female. If, you know, the sheriff is rural, you know, the undersheriff should be more urban. Like that. And if Walt is, you know, more into the social, you know, implications of the job that he does and knowing the history of the county, of knowing the area, you know, of knowing all of these things, you know, that make up the culture and society, you know, which he's, you know, enforcing the laws, then, you know, probably, you know, Victoria Moretti would be maybe more knowledgeable of the technological aspects of it. I mean, she went to the fifth largest police academy in the United States there in Philadelphia, and her knowledge of DNA testing and, you know, forensic crime detection and all that would be certainly, you know, a lot more advanced than Walt's. So they make a good team. They make a good, you know, ability to bounce off of each other. You know, for me, that's always going to be one of the strong suits, you know, of anything that you write. I'm always concerned, you know, with place and always concerned with character. You know, technology's all well and good like that, but, you know, I can't read about that, you know, for three or four pages. Whereas you give me an interesting character, or, you know, or an interesting landscape like that, and I'll read about that, you know, for as long as you like.
Well, this book picks up after the events of the previous novel, Depth of Winter. So what's going on here in Land of Wolves?
Well, the title itself actually comes from a Basque proverb that a land of strangers is a land of wolves. And Walt's kind of had a tough row here to, you know, to go and down in Mexico, like against some drug cartels. And he's kind of had to recover, you know, the individual that he was maybe in Vietnam when he was a Marine investigator, like that. And because what he finds himself in down there really isn't a police action, it's more of a war. You know, he gets through. He gets through with the assistance of, you know, reassociating himself with that man who he was. And when he comes back to Wyoming, he finds himself in kind of a strange situation where he doesn't really recognize, you know, home the way that he has before. I mean, he's kind of a stranger in a strange land, in a place where he was born and grew up and had his career, was married and had children. And now he's back, like at, and not only as a stranger, you know, in a strange land, but something of a stranger to himself. He's trying to, you know, get rid of that guy, like that he brought back, you know, to try and survive down in Mexico. And that individual isn't going quietly into that dark night. He's not disappearing maybe as quickly as Walt might have hoped. So he's kind of confronted, you know, with some aspects of himself once again that he's going to have to contend with. That makes for an internal kind of challenge, like that, in turmoil that he's going to have to overcome.
I'm also curious about another person who shows up in this, and that is Virgil White Buffalo. He shows up in the sense that Walt believes that Virgil is his spiritual guide. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, I mean, where it is that I'm located, like at on the, you know, Wyoming-Montana border, the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow Reservation are, you know, immediately to the north of me. And so they're an amazing people, like at, and to not include them, you know, in my books, you know, would be, excuse the term, criminal. And so, you know, having them be a major part of that, you know, means having it be a major part of their spirituality and mysticism, because it's such a part of their day-to-day life. And, you know, to try and include that, you know, kind of reminds the readers like that, you know, Walt is, you know, is a part of Wyoming like that, but his kind of people have only been there for a couple of hundred years, whereas, like, say, Virgil White Buffalo or Henry Standing Bears, you know, people have been there for, you know, thousands of years. And to neglect that, you know, would be, you know, something that I think would, you know, be to the detriment of the books, you know. And so it's kind of an important aspect to try and bring across and also to try and convey to the reader that this is a different world. And I like writing in the margins, you know, to a certain extent, you know, where we think we know what's going on, but then we just saw something out of the corner of our eye, or we just heard something just out of ear reach. And, you know, maybe there's a little more out there than we suspect.
You know, when we last talked about depth of winter, you told me about going to Mexico to do research. I'm curious, did this new novel pose some research challenges for you as well?
Oh, it did. I mean, the big thing in this book was, of course, like that, you know, along with, you know, the death of this shepherd that, you know, becomes, you know, one of the major aspects of the investigation, there's also the appearance of a wolf, an actual wolf, like in the Bighorn Mountains, which is, an entire basin away, you know, from the Lamar Valley and the Yellowstone wolves. And periodically they do show up. You know, it's interesting to note, you know, just how much of kind of a hot topic, you know, response, you know, wolves are in the American West. And, you know, this wolf shows up, and he's somewhat aged. He's been kicked off from one of the packs, a little gray around the muzzle, a little crippled up, you know, maybe a little older. And, of course, Walt, you know, has a certain empathy for this particular wolf because he seems kind of familiar to that particular, you know, species, or more importantly, condition. And it's interesting to utilize that wolf like that. But then again, I had to make sure that I didn't just, you know, take all of the information that seemed to be floating around out there, that I had to kind of dig in and start doing my own investigations about wolves, you know, and their patterns and as much of them as I possibly could learn, you know, in the research period for the book. And, you know, the fun of that, of course, is that I got to go talk, you know, with the game wardens, you know, and talk with, you know, the large predator response team that, you know, the Wyoming Game and Fish has, you know, and learn a lot more about wolves, you know, from them, the guys that had the practical experience of dealing with them on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, that's always good. That's the fun part about being a writer, is to be able to dive in and do that research.
So what's next for you and Walt?
Well, you know, it's strange you should ask that, but the next Walt book is actually called The Next to Last Stand. The reason for that title is there's a painting, you know, that I'm sure at some point in time you have seen, it's a painting by Cassely Adams that toured the United States, you know, about 10 years after the Little Bighorn Battle. It's a huge painting, about 16 by 9 feet, of the Custer Battle. It's called Custer's Last Fight. And the reason you probably have seen it is that, you know, a bankrupt saloon ended up selling the painting to Augie Bush, and it became the property of Budweiser, back when they were a struggling little brewery in St. Louis. And they, at one point in time, were shipping out about 2 million copies of this poster to all of the bars and saloons all over America and sending them, you know, to servicemen overseas during World War I. And so if you've been in a bar in the United States, chances are you've probably seen that painting. After World War II in 1946, Budweiser decided that, you know, that they had utilized the painting as much as they could and decided to give the painting to the 7th Cavalry, which was at that point in time quartered in Fort Bliss, Texas. And they hung it on their commissary wall, where it hung until 1946, when the commissary burned to the ground and the painting was destroyed. Or was it? And so we're going into Walt's first art heist book next, which should be kind of interesting. I'm going to have to dive wholeheartedly into Custer and the Little Bighorn, which is something I've been able to avoid up to now, but now I think it's something I'm going to have to, you know, take to hand.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Craig, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Oh, my pleasure, sir. Good to be here, as always.
Craig Johnson's latest novel is Land of Wolves. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes, and you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.